You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Well, happy Friday, TGIF, Shabbat Shalom, Jumah Mubarak, whatever it may be for you, end of the week. Greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you. Anything goes Friday in our second and third hour, and of course, in our first hour, Senator Bernie Sanders, our national town hall meeting, Brunch with Bernie. You can check out his website at sanders.senate.gov. And if you would like to speak with Senator Sanders, our telephone number, 866-987-THOM. Bernie, how are you?
I'm great, Tom. How are you?
I am fine. I've been keeping track of what you're up to these days over at sanders.senate.gov and getting the Bernie buzz. You guys have been working on, what, primary health care, the Farm Bill, the Fed, and Social Security?
On the road today in northern Vermont, we just opened up a beautiful new, what we call a community-based outreach clinic for veterans.
Mm-hmm.
And as a member of the Veterans Committee, what we are trying to do is strengthen primary care for veterans in Vermont and all over this country, bringing health care closer to the veteran rather than having them travel long distances to the larger medical centers. So it's a cost-effective way of providing good quality health care to veterans. We're making progress in that in Vermont. We're making progress in that nationally. Last week, and I'm chairman of the subcommittee that deals with primary care, and I believe that in the midst of a health care system, which in many ways is dysfunctional, one of the areas we just need to put an enormous amount of energy into is primary health care. Because when you do that, when you allow people to gain access to the doctors and the nurses that they need when they get sick, not only do you ease human suffering and the pain that people experience, you also save the system money by preventing diseases from getting worse and having people end up in the emergency room at great expense or having people end up in the hospital. And one of the things that I'm very proud of is during the health care reform bill, we got $10 billion, double funding for community health centers all over America, and we're going to double the number of people who can access these very fine medical facilities from 20 million to 40 million. So I think people, if you're in need of affordable medical care, we have these community, federally qualified community health centers in every state in the union. They provide health care. Often they provide dental care, which is a serious problem in our country, mental health counseling, low-cost prescription drugs. So people should check them out. If you need affordable health care, they provide people a sliding scale. If you have no health insurance, they take Medicaid, Medicare, whatever, private insurance, it's a good opportunity to get good quality primary health care.
Yeah, these are great programs. And the community health programs are a piece of Obamacare that you got into the bill, if I recall.
Right. We doubled funding over a five-year period, and it'll mean that an additional 20 million people will be able to access affordable, good quality health care in Vermont.
20 million.
We have almost... In a small state, we now have 120,000 people who get their primary health care and dental care from these community health centers. That's per capita more than almost any other state, but all over America, more and more people are taking advantage of them.
That's marvelous. Now, the Farm Bill, you introduced an amendment to the Farm Bill for something that, to the best of my knowledge, has never come before the Senate before. Do I have that right?
To the best of my knowledge. And it's a very simple, I would say, conservative amendment. And this is what it said. There's a lot of concern about genetically modified food. And I'm not a fearmonger, and I'm not going to tell everybody, you know, that this is terrible, the end of the world. I don't think it is. But what I do think is that people have the right to know what is in the food that they are eating and the food that they are serving their kids. And one of the concerns is that genetically modified food is a reasonably new concept, and we haven't seen the long-term health impacts of that, if there are any. And I introduced an amendment which very simply said that states should have the right to require labeling on food that is genetically modified. And needless to say, this amendment was opposed by Monsanto and by a whole lot of big food companies for a wide variety of reasons, despite the fact that all over Europe and in 49 separate countries around the world, that labeling currently exists. So I think that people have a right to know what is in the food that they're eating, we pushed that amendment. We only got 26 votes, just one Republican,
One Republican. I'm impressed.
Lisa Murkowski of Alaska.
Wow.
But it's a start. It's the first time an amendment like this has hit the floor, and I think there's a lot of support for it nationally. We have a lot of people coming to our website to indicate support for it, and we're going to keep going on that, Bill.
That's great. Now, the Fed has been in your sights.
They have been in my crosshairs, and I'll tell you why. As you and I have discussed many, many times, if the middle class is going to be rebuilt in this country rather than continue shrinking, if we're going to create the millions of jobs that we desperately need with unemployment so high, you really need a new mission for Wall Street. It cannot continue to be the largest gambling casino in the world. They have to be part of the productive economy. They have to make prudent loans to businesses who are actually producing products, creating products and services, and creating jobs. And that is very far from where Wall Street is today. But to get the kind of Wall Street we need a new Fed. We need a Fed that is not part of the Wall Street entity, but is representing the needs of the middle class and working families and small businesses. Now, one of the problems with the Fed right now, many people don't know this, is in terms of the regional Feds, there are 12 regional Feds that have 9 members each, plus a president and a vice president. Of the 9 members on the New York Fed and the other regional Feds, 6 of them come from the banking community. 3 of them are directly coming from the banking community, and that includes Jamie Dimon of J.P. Morgan Chase, which is, of course, the largest financial institution in this country. So he sits right on the New York Fed. And then you got 3 other people on the Fed who are non-bankers but appointed by the banking community, and then you got 3 others who are appointed by the Fed. So what we're trying to do is get the bankers, get Jamie Dimon, get the others off of the regional Feds, have people on the Fed whose job is to represent ordinary Americans to figure out how we can grow our economy for the middle class and not just represent the interest of Wall Street. So we're going to try to get, we have legislation that does that. We're going to try to get that amendment onto the floor as soon as we can, and we would hope the American people would ask their senators to support it.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that there's just a huge consensus about that. And Social Security, what's up with that?
Well, here's what's going on, and it is, you know, I've mentioned many, many times, right now, between today and the end of the calendar year, even well beyond the election, the big issue that's going to be floating around Congress is deficit reduction and how you deal with a $15.6 trillion national debt and a $1 trillion-plus deficit. And in my view, it's important when we discuss this issue never to forget that these deficits were caused significantly by 2 wars that Bush took us into and forgot to pay for. They were caused by huge tax breaks, much of which went to the very wealthiest people in this country who certainly don't need it. And most significantly, we don't talk about this at all, as a result of this Wall Street-caused recession, revenues are at the lowest point when you compare revenue to overall GDP. We're at 14.8%, which is the lowest we've been in like 50 or 60 years.
Wow.
So what's happening in the midst of this recession, less revenue is coming into the federal government. You add that to the tax breaks, add that to the unpaid for wars, that's why you have the deficit. Bottom line here is you don't balance the budget on the elderly, the sick, the children, and the poor, who are not the cause of this deficit. We've got to go forward in a way that is fair, not cut Social Security, Medicare, or Medicaid.
There you go. We'll be back with more. Your calls, actually, coming up next. Our National Town Hall meeting, Brunch with Bernie, Senator Bernie Sanders, on the line with us right now live.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And check out Bernie's website, sanders.senate.gov. You can sign on to his constitutional amendment to roll back Citizens United and sign up for the Bernie Buzz, his newsletter.
Private enterprise, indeed, became too private. It became privileged enterprise, not free enterprise.
Taking back the mainstream media 3 hours a day, 5 days a week. Tom Hartman here with you, and Senator Bernie Sanders on the line. It's our Brunch with Bernie Hour, taking your calls. Gene in Vancouver, Washington. You're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Yes, thank you. I have a two-part question. Senator, do you think that Obama's lack of involvement in Wisconsin contributed to Walker's victory? And do you think that there is a self-defeating loop in the left, which includes many labor leaders, that led to a lack of a primary challenger to Obama?
Well, Gene, what I think, I don't know the answer to your first question, what impact Obama would or would not have had in Wisconsin. There are some people who say that it would have been helpful. There are other people who say, you know, everything being equal, the folks wanted to not have somebody from, you know, from Washington come and telling them how to vote, and it could have backfired. So I don't know the answer. But this is what I do think in terms of where we as progressives have got to go. First of all, we have got to be very clear in laying out a progressive analysis of what's going on in America and a progressive agenda, both of those things. And I think the analysis is a pretty simple one. And I have to say that I don't think the Democratic leadership really fully gets it. I am an independent. I caucus with the Democrats. There are some people in the Democratic caucus who work night and day for working families, doing a great job. But there are others who just don't get it. And I think that the analysis of what's happening today is not complicated. And that is, we are moving, in my view, toward an oligarchic form of government, where you have, in the last study that I have seen, 93, that was between the year 2009 and 2010, 93% of all new income created over that year went to the top 1%. So what you have is a nation where the small number of people on top have incredible wealth, have incredible income, they're doing phenomenally well, but they're not satisfied. It appears they have some kind of disease in which they need more and more and more, some insatiable desire to own it all. And in the process, they are crushing the middle class and hurting tens of millions of people. And I think the agenda is that we have got to organize and fight back as aggressively as we can to, number one, demand that the wealthiest people in this country start paying their fair share of taxes. Number two, that we have to end these incredible corporate loopholes that enable large corporations, some of them making billions of dollars a year, to pay nothing in taxes, to make sure that companies and individuals who put their money in tax havens in the Cayman Islands and Bermuda start paying their fair share of taxes. We have to deal very profoundly with this disastrous trade policies, which have been bipartisan, Republicans and Democrats, which have enabled us to lose, forced us to lose millions of good-paying jobs. Companies shut down. They move to China. They bring their products back into the United States. We have to have a massive jobs program to rebuild our infrastructure and create millions of good-paying jobs on our roads, our bridges, on our schools, water systems, wastewater plants, rail, an enormous amount of work that is desperately needed right now, and we could put millions of people back to work doing that. We need to transform our energy system. Republicans and have been resisting any effort, virtually any effort, to deal with the serious planetary crisis of global warming, and yet we have the technology today. We can do it today to begin to move aggressively to solar, wind, biomass, geothermal. The technology is there. We can make it better. We can move aggressively to weatherization and energy efficiency. All of those things can happen. And I think that's what a good part of what the progressive agenda has to be. We've got to be clear about it. We have to say, no, we're not going to cut Social Security. We're not going to cut Medicare and Medicaid. We're going to move to a deficit reduction by asking the wealthy and large corporations to pay their fair share of taxes. We're going to take a hard look at military spending, cut military waste, and there is a lot of that. And I think if we're clear about those issues, we could begin to capture the white working class in this country, which has gone very significantly toward the Republicans.
Andy in hang on just a second here. Andy in Portland, you're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Yes, hello, Tom, Senator Sanders, privilege. Two-part question. First question is, what's the odds of being able to pass an amendment? I know that truth is open to interpretation, but an amendment that says if you're a news channel or a news station, that you have to put out factual evidence. And then the second one is, are you aware that I was hearing on Democracy Now! That we're still in talks with, although the name has been changed, with the TPP treaty that basically entrenches the multinational corporations to have more rights and more privileges than sovereign nations or
citizens. This is the Trans-Pacific Partnership. Bernie, we have just a little less than a minute.
Well, actually, I was just talking to the our trade representative, Ambassador Kirk, just about that issue yesterday. So I am aware of the TPP issue. And the issue that Andy is raising, for listeners who may not know, at least one part of it, is the following. When we do these trade agreements, whether it's NAFTA or any of the other trade agreements, a lot of small provisions in there, which have enormous impact. One of them that has always concerned me deals with prescription drugs. And what happens is the pharmaceutical industry always insists that companies can't move to generics in a rapid way, that they force them to buy these brand name drugs, which are very, very expensive, especially for people in a poor country.
Bernie, would you like to pick up a little more of this topic on the other side?
Yeah, let's do
okay,
that.
We'll do that. Senator Bernie Sanders with us. It's our national town hall meeting, Brunch with Bernie, right here on the Tom Hartman program. Your calls for United States Senator Bernie Sanders. We'll be right back with the Senator.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman program. Call 866-987-THOM.
And check out Bernie's website, sanders.senate.gov. It's a great news resource. Plus, you can get his newsletter there and sign on with his constitutional amendment. For some reason, I got written twice. I don't know. Senator Bernie Sanders with us. And Bernie, you had just started to touch on Social Security, the answer on that Social Security question, just as we were going to the break.
Right. Here's the point about Social Security and what we're trying to do. And I speak as the chairman of a caucus called Defending Social Security in the Senate. To my mind, at a time when you have tens and tens of millions of people depending upon their retirement for strong Social Security benefits, you got people with millions of people with disabilities depending upon Social Security. It would be an act of great immorality, in my view, to cut Social Security. But most importantly, the point needs to be made, is when you're talking about deficit reduction, you're not talking about Social Security, because Social Security has nothing to do with the deficit. Social Security is funded, as everybody knows, by the payroll tax. Social Security today has a $2.7 trillion surplus. Social Security can pay out every benefit owed to every eligible American for the next 22 years. And if you want to make Social Security stronger beyond 22 years, all you have to do is lift the cap on taxable income, which is now at $110,000, meaning that a millionaire or a billionaire contributes the same amount into the Social Security Trust Fund if somebody who makes $110,000. You lift that cap, you could even start at $250,000, and you're going to have enough money coming into the trust fund to make Social Security strong for the next 75 years. So people who go around saying, oh, we have a deficit crisis, we have to cut Social Security, are mixing apples and oranges. Social Security has nothing to do with a deficit, and we're going to do everything we can. Some of us, in the Senate at least, are going to do everything we can to keep Social Security off of the table. It must not be cut.
Linda in Deerfield Beach, Florida. You're on the air, Senator Sanders.
Thank you, Senator Sanders, for all you do. I have a, I'm a postal worker, and of course we're all very worried about the bill 1789.
Right.
Have you heard anything about that bill? Are we going to lose our 5-day delivery, or are we going to keep it?
Well, this is an issue, as you may know, Linda, we work very, very hard on. And while the bill, I introduced a bill in the Senate, which was very strong, we didn't get that, but we got something that was reasonably strong that didn't, it maintained, it did not shut down, post offices all over the country. The original proposal from the postmaster, as you recall, was to shut down about, as I recall, 15,000 post offices, many of them rural post offices. Half of the processing plants in this country end Saturday mail delivery service. That did not happen in the Senate bill. Now, the House bill, as you indicate, is very draconian. You've got Republicans there who really, just as they do not believe in Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid, they do not believe in the U.S. postal system. They would like to see it privatized. So there's a very bad bill out there. Now, the good news is, we think that that bill can't pass. That's what we're hearing. We think it cannot pass. And we have, the latest that I've heard is they're not going to bring it up in the immediate future. It may be after the July break. But I don't think that he has the votes to pass that. And if they did, we would challenge the basic premises of that bill in conference very, very strongly. Bottom line is we need changes in the Postal Service. We need to give the Postal Service more flexibility. We need the Postal Service to raise more revenue. We do not need the Postal Service to be laying off or to be reducing its employment by hundreds of thousands of workers in the middle of a recession.
Rich in Hot Springs, Arkansas. Rich, you're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for taking my call. Good afternoon. My question is, if progressives are united in the fact that the rich don't pay their fair share of the federal tax burden, yet the top 5% pay 58% of the federal taxes, and the bottom 95% pay 42%. So I guess my question to Senator Sanders is, how much more should the top 5% pay?
Okay, Rich, can you hang on there for a second? Rich, are you still on the phone?
Yes, I am.
Okay. Here's the question, Rich. It's a good question. And let's just think about it. You're telling me how much the wealthy are paying in taxes, and the idea of my conservative friends is that the poor, wealthy people are just overtaxed. But you have to put what they're paying, Rich, into the context of how much they're earning. So here's the fact. The top 1% today earns more income than the bottom 50%. We have seen as a result of this Wall Street recession, many people leaving the middle class and into poverty. And they just, you know, you can't get blood out of a stone. So, Rich, when you have, if you look at the distribution of income in America, if you look at the distribution of wealth, what you find is people on top have almost all of it. Yeah, poor people are not paying federal income tax. By the way, they are paying federal gas tax. They're paying Social Security tax, Medicare tax. They are paying those things. But you can't get blood out of a stone. What I will also tell you, Rich, and people like Warren Buffett make this point, is the tax system is so screwy right now that you have very wealthy people who pay nothing in federal income tax. And what point that Warren Buffett makes is that he is paying a lower tax rate than his secretary, and the rich are paying a lower effective tax rate than any time in the last many, many, many years. So to answer your question, at a time when the wealthiest people are doing phenomenally well, at a time when their effective tax rate is the lowest that it has been in decades, at a time when the middle class is collapsing and poverty is increasing, yes, I do believe that the wealthy should be asked to pay more in taxes. And the reason, when you say, well, the top 5% is paying a big chunk of the taxes, the reason is they are making a huge percentage of the income. That's why they're paying those taxes. But individually, their effective tax rate is, in many cases, significantly lower than it was 10, 20, 30 years ago.
Well, but I don't have the numbers on the 5%, but I've read on the 1%. The 1% makes 16 to 18% of the income and pay 35 to 38% of the federal income tax. So, you know, how much more progressive do we need to be?
Well, we need to be very – well, if I were to tell you, and I don't have all the facts, you know, the statistics right in front of me right now, but if you look at wealth, when you have 400 individuals in this country, 400 owning more wealth than the bottom 150 million Americans. We got one family, the Walton family of Walmart, owning more wealth than the bottom 30% of America. And when you have the effective tax rate of the rich lower than it has been in many decades, yeah. How much more? Well, I don't, you know, can't tell you exactly, but do I think they should be paying more? I do, and I can't understand why any working person would think otherwise.
Okay. Garland.
That's my answer, Richard, but thank you very much for calling.
Garland in Harlem, New York. You are on the air with Senator Sanders. Thanks for listening to WWRL.
Yes, I got a major problem. We're having a Wisconsin here by Tuesday that the people are not even thinking or knowing about. We need to have, to me, some kind of a constitutional amendment like you were talking about for Citizens United to deal with this darn campaign for primary accountability that's putting millions of dollars into the elections that are going on with Rangel, Velasquez, and over there in Brooklyn with the Jeffries that they're supporting, because they're totally messing up everything. We can't get any time on radio. There's the robocalls have started. The people like me are going out and buying sound equipment, banging on doors, trying to get people out, because there'll be no way that we'll be able to get any word out by Tuesday about the real election and stuff. And these guys don't even put their names on the literature. There's no accountability whatsoever for how much, and they're putting millions into these small campaigns. And very few people usually turn out in primaries. So this is a new technique, and the only way to bump them off is to have a congressional amendment.
Right. What we need, here's the issue, and I think the caller is touching on just an issue of huge, huge consequence. And it's hard for me to imagine that anybody in America, regardless of their politics, thinks that the Citizens United Supreme Court decision makes any sense at all. And when I talked earlier about this country moving toward an oligarchic form of government where control is going to rest in the hands of an increasingly few large families, what it means is that when elections take place, money is of no account. You know, Tom, a couple of weeks ago, the media reported that the Koch brothers were thinking of spending some $400 million on this election, and I think Sheldon Adelson has said that he would spend, what was it, $100 million?
Yes, at least he said unlimited sums, but let's start with $100 million.
People don't understand. The Koch brothers are worth $50 billion. $50 billion. That's an unimaginable sum of money for an average person. But if you were worth $50 billion and you felt very strongly, as they do, about politics in America, you had the opportunity to buy the United States government, why wouldn't you spend $400 million or $1 billion or $2 billion? What does that matter? I mean, it's like the average person spending $100 or $50. It's not all that much to them. And if your guy wins the presidency, you're going to get it back in space. I think you made the point earlier. This is not a campaign donation. This is an investment. So if you can spend $1 billion buying the United States government, getting all kinds of tax breaks, ending all kinds of requirements that limit pollution, killing sustainable energy in favor of fossil fuels, man, $1 billion, $400 million, a pretty good investment to get all those things.
Yeah, and in fact, the New York Times yesterday, one of Romney's big donors was quoted as saying, "I'm investing." It's just
correct.
They're right up front of
us. Absolutely correct.
Senator Bernie Sanders with us. More with Brunch with Bernie right after this.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
It's our national town hall meeting with a man I think of as America's senator, Senator Bernie Sanders. Check out his website, sanders.senate.gov. Occupying the media 3 hours a day, 5 days a week. It's the Tom Hartman Program. Welcome back. Colonel Terry, you're on the air with Senator Sanders from Santa Cruz. You're in Santa Cruz.
Senator Sanders, I want to compliment you. First of all, you are one of the few fully honest and wise men in the U.S. Congress and Senate. More significantly, sir, I am so frustrated as a progressive person who also knows how Washington works at the weakness Senator Reid demonstrates as the Senate Majority Leader. On the national media, he is so weak and ineffective at pointing out the clear realities you address, regarding Republican corruption and corporate cronyism that seeks to damage our economy unpatriotically, the failure of the Republicans to be honest about so many things, and the purchase of our government by corporate interests, and the reforms that are needed. Reid is just ineffective.
Well, let me just say this about
perhaps Sherrod Brown.
Hang on just a second. Colonel Terry, let's let Bernie.
Let me just say this about Harry Reid, in defense of Harry Reid. Harry Reid is the majority leader, and he has to represent, his job is to represent all of the points of view within the Democratic caucus. I'm an independent. I'm in the Democratic caucus. He has to represent my point of view, but he has to represent some very, very conservative points of view. So I would urge people not to be so hard on Reid. The problem is you have a Democratic caucus that is nowhere near as progressive as it should be. If it was a progressive caucus, you'd see a more progressive Reid, because his job is to represent that caucus. And I think the word has got to get out to those Democrats who sometimes act more like Republicans, who are more interested in representing corporations rather than working families, that if they want to get reelected, they're going to have to change their positions in a very fundamental way.
Herb, in New York City, you're on the air with Senator Bernie Sanders.
Hello?
Hello?
Hello.
My question to Senator Sanders is this. How much, if the wealthy were taxed as Senator Sanders thinks they should be, how much actual money in dollars would come in, and how far would it go to solve the government's fiscal problem and to solve the problems of the general population?
Well, obviously, the amount of revenue that comes in depends upon the kind of taxes that are imposed. But let me just give you one example. Right now, we are losing about $100 billion every single year because corporations and wealthy people are putting their money in tax havens in foreign countries, whether it's Switzerland, Cayman Islands, and so on. That is $100 billion every single year. What I can tell you is there are a number of large corporations who have made billions of dollars in recent years who have not paid a nickel in taxes. I think if we develop a progressive tax system, if we develop and end the loopholes that exist in corporate America, and if you take a hard look at military spending, we're now spending about $700 billion a year on the military, which is more than the rest of the world combined. If you get away, you get start eliminating some of the waste that exists in a number of government programs. One of the things this farm bill did, by the way, is it cut the deficit over a 10-year period by, I believe, something like $23 billion, which is quite appropriate. I think if you begin to do those things, we can make significant inroads in A, reducing the deficit, and B, coming up with the revenue we need to invest in America. That means in our infrastructure, in our energy, transforming our energy system, in education, and when you do that, you create jobs. So we have a twofold economic crisis that we have to deal with. Number one, we do have to deal with the deficit, and you got to deal with that in a fair way, not on the backs of the middle class. And second of all, you need to invest in this country to create the jobs that we desperately need, create more taxpayers, expand the economy, and that will also, as we put people to work, reduce the deficit.
Elizabeth in Summertown, Tennessee, you're on the air with Senator Bernie Sanders.
Oh, hi. I'm really concerned that we're not hearing a thing on the regular media about the conference in Rio on the ecology. And I see, you know, so many things happening. I wondered how we can push our Congress into being a little more concerned about what's happening with our land, air, and water, and get it into the media, too.
Well, what you have there... what's going on in Congress is in so many ways outrageous. It's hard to tell you which is the most outrageous. But certainly the fact that the oil companies and the coal companies are exerting such an enormous impact on legislative decisions that it's really quite incredible. Almost the entire scientific community is agreed that A, global warming is real, B, that it is significantly caused by human activity, the emission of greenhouse gases. C, that it is already causing devastating problems in terms of droughts and floods and extreme weather disturbances. Those are the realities. And if you were to ask me, Elizabeth, what Congress is doing to significantly address those problems, I'm afraid I would tell you not very much at all. We're doing something, but not very much at all. And the reason for that is you have right-wing Republicans every single day fighting on behalf of the coal companies and the oil companies, tremendous amounts of money coming into the political process from those groups, and we're not doing anything near what we should be doing, which, by the way, if we act aggressively to cut greenhouse gas emissions and move to weatherization, move to energy efficiency, move to sustainable energy, we can create many millions of jobs. So I wish I could give you more hopeful information, but the reality is that the fossil fuel industry is incredibly powerful. Republicans are wedded to them, and we have not made the kind of progress we should.
Yeah, and it's been more than 30 years since we were moving in the right direction. Senator Bernie Sanders, Bernie, thank you so much for being with us today.
Great to be with you, Tom. Thank you.
Have a great afternoon. We will be back with more on Anything Goes, Anything Goes Friday here on the Tom Hartman Program. I've got a couple things I want to share with you. One in particular, why the Republicans were actually happy, at least some Republicans, when Barack Obama won in 2008. Stick around.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And I'm trying to scroll back through. Yes, here it is. It was H. Governick in our chat room. Tip of the hat to you, and thanks for pointing out to me this op-ed that Dick Morris wrote back in 2008. I want to go off on this for a minute, and then we'll just open the lines. It's Anything Goes Friday. You can call about anything you want. It doesn't need to be about this, but I have to tell you this story. And you know, something that I learned about from, as I say, you know, we've got some of the smartest people on earth in our chat room. It's free. You can hang out there. It's over at TomHartman.com. Dick Morris was a campaign strategist for Bill Clinton back in 1996. Before resigning when news broke that he was sucking the toes of prostitutes. He paid for one with a check, and the check became public knowledge, and Bill Clinton let him go. So after leaving the Democratic Party in disgrace, Dick Morris, like most other freaks and perverts, found a new home in the Republican Party and eventually on Fox so-called News, often appearing with loofah-obsessed Bill O'Reilly. By 2008, Dick Morris was a rock star on the right and one of the go-to Republican strategists for Fox so-called News. And right after President Obama won the election that year, Dick Morris wrote a very interesting column. Now, keep in mind, this was 2008, November, December of 2008. Actually, it was published on November 6th, 2008, the day after the election. He published it in The Hill, and it was titled, "An Election That the Republicans Needed to Lose, Good Luck Obama." You hear that? This is the day after the last presidential election. He was Dick Morris, the Fox News go-to guy, saying, "Hey, it's a good thing. If you want to know why the economy is where it is today, why Republicans are acting the way they're acting, and why President Obama's reelection chances are not all that great, then it's worth reading Toe Sucker Dick Morris's 2008 column. Rewind back to 2008. Remember, you know, whoom, 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 you step into the way back machine here. Remember those days? We need a sound effect, you know. When President Bush and Treasury Secretary Paulson were routinely addressing the nation about the dire financial crisis, and Bush looked absolutely scared to death, Paulson's hands literally were trembling as he was giving press conferences. In that year, 2008, the last year of the Bush presidency, 2.6 million Americans lost their jobs just in that one year. The foreclosure crisis was speeding up. Banks were failing. Businesses were closing their doors. It was an economic doomsday. We went into the election losing hundreds of thousands of jobs a month, and the stock market in the tank. and Dick Morris and the rest of the top Republican strategists knew it. This is why Morris wrote in his column after the election, quote, "If there ever was an election that was not worth winning, it was the contest of 2008. While it was hard fought on both sides, had McCain won, it might have spelled the end of the Republican Party. As it is, the party is well situated to come back in 2010 and in 2012 if it learns the lessons of this year." End of quote. You know, I'd often wondered why the Republican Party, with so many wealthy donors in its ranks, I mean, you know, look at the Koch brothers sitting on $50 billion. Why would they sit back and let the Democratic Party out fundraise them? Which is what happened in 2008. Didn't make any sense to me. Well, it could be because they really didn't want to win in 2008. As Dick Morris wrote the day after the election, quote, "Simply put, all hell is about to break loose in the markets and the economy. Had McCain won, he would be the latter-day Hoover, blamed for the disaster that unfolded on his watch. Now it's Obama's problem. With the Republicans suffering a wipeout in congressional elections, the ball is squarely now in the Democratic court. Good luck." End of quote. In other words, Republicans knew things were going to get worse. And with Obama getting elected and the Democrats taking the House and the Senate, they believed that the Democrats would be blamed for it. And they knew it was going to get worse because the fundamentals are of our economy, the sort of stuff that keeps us safe from financial crashes, that through the 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s, and the early 80s grew an enormous middle class and that kept wealth inequality low, that had been hollowed out over the last 30 years, starting with Ronald Reagan. Wall Street was a deregulated mess and had blown a $7 trillion hole in our economy. American workers, without the protection of unions, were no longer making enough money to buy the stuff that they used to make and stimulate the economy. And thanks to the Reagan and Bush tax cuts, working people were falling farther and farther behind a whole new class of super-rich Americans like Mitt Romney. So because of an addiction to so-called free trade, even when Americans bought stuff, most of the profits went overseas, stimulating foreign economies. Now, Republicans knew all of this going into President Obama's first term, so they just sat back and waited for it all to melt down. A group of them, including House Majority Leader Eric Cantor, Newt Gingrich, Fox News pollster Frank Luntz, even met together the night of President Obama's inauguration at a fancy D.C. steakhouse named the Caucus Room and laid out their strategy over the next 2 years, which was simply do nothing and let the economy continue to tank. And that way they'd be able to win back Congress in 2 years. They also figured, because of all these problems with the economy, that the president's stimulus wouldn't work. So a couple of Senate Republicans let it pass. I mean, after whittling it down and devoting a full third of it to tax cuts that really don't stimulate the economy, but made the rich friends richer, so, you know, they were okay with it. But they misjudged. Like a tourniquet, President Obama's injection of federal money into the economy through his stimulus slowed the hemorrhaging of jobs. The private sector started to find its footing again. Job losses immediately slowed, and within months, it looked like President Obama had the economy on track to begin creating jobs again for the first time in years. Uh-oh. So much for toe-sucking Dick Morris's theory. All right, so Republicans at that point realized they had to kick it up a notch. They couldn't just sit back anymore and let the Democrats drown trying to fix the economy. They actually had to go on the offense and sabotage the Democrats, actually hold President Obama's head underwater. What followed was obstruction after obstruction, filibuster after filibuster, and lie after lie. Toe-sucker Dick Morris's Fox so-called news gave Republicans cover for the sabotage by broadcasting these lies over and over and over again. Republicans knew if they were successful, then they could blame all the failures of Reagan and Bushonomics on Obama and fulfill Senator Mitch McConnell's number one goal, which, as he said the day after the election, and as he said again just last year, his number one goal was to make Obama a one-term president. So after the stimulus passed, Republicans dug in. They set a new record for filibusters in the Senate. They blocked every single one of President Obama's attempts to further stimulate the economy. Democrats in the House passed legislation to cut off tax breaks for corporate job outsourcers. So Republicans in the Senate filibustered it. Even though it could have put an end to 50,000 American manufacturing jobs, that were being lost every single month and still are due to outsourcing. The Republican sabotage strategy paid off. The economy didn't grow fast enough in those first 2 years, so that, you know, leading to Republicans winning big in the midterms. And when Republicans took control of the House, they kicked their economy crashing agenda into high gear. They pledged to repeal Obamacare, which would kill 400,000 jobs every year for the next decade. They passed the austerity-soaked Paul Ryan budget this year, which, according to the Economic Policy Institute, would kill 4.1 million jobs over the next 2 years. Senate Republicans filibustered the American Jobs Act and so blocked heavy investments in infrastructure that would have created 2 million new jobs. And with each new showdown over the budget and the debt limit, Republicans have succeeded in extracting even more spending cuts that suck money out of the economy. They've slashed unemployment insurance, forcing 400,000 Americans to lose their benefits this year, meaning they don't have money to spend anymore, so our economy shrinks. They've slashed spending for green energy, for infrastructure, for health care, and for education, all creating more job losses. Remember, these guys aren't just talking about job losses, these Republicans. They're bragging about job losses. And on the statewide level, Republican governors pushing their own austerity, they've knocked 600,000 people off the rolls. So now we're a few months away from the 2012 election, months away from knowing if Dick Morris was right back in 28. Let's hope he was wrong.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And now, Anything Goes Friday. We'll pick up your calls right after this, 15 minutes past the hour here on the Tom Hartman Program. James Garfield, amazing. Welcome back. Anything Goes Friday. No, it wasn't James Garfield singing. It's one we attempted. No, not a chance. Rich Harrisay? Rich in Salem, Oregon.
Yeah.
Hey, Rich, what's up?
Right. I'm reporting from the front lines in the battle against corporate personhood.
Okay.
You know, you got me started with your book, Unequal Protection.
Well, good. Thank you. Tell us what you're up to.
Part of the camp. What's that?
Tell us what you're up to.
Oh, okay. As a part of that campaign, I've co-founded a Salem area Move to Amend affiliate.
Mm-hmm.
And it's called Marion Pope Move to Amend. And we've just completed a major project, a video play. It's called The Prosecution of Judge Waite.
Now, for our listeners who don't know what you're talking about, Morrison Remick Waite was the Chief Justice of the United States Supreme Court in 1886 when the Santa Clara County decision was made.
Right. And it reveals to people what personhood for corporations means.
Mm-hmm.
Folks can get one if they want one of these DVDs by emailing mptomovetoamend@gmail.com.
Okay.
So MP stands for Marion Pope, and then Move to Amend.
Which is, Marion Pope is what, the name of two counties there?
Yeah, two counties.
Okay.
Right.
Marion County and Pope County. So MP, Move to Amend at gmail.com, and people can get a copy. Is there a website?
Yeah, it's actually, you've got, this is.
But it's terrible. More complicated?
It's Marion Pope spelled out, Move to Amend. .org.
Okay, Marion Pope, movetoamend.org. And, of course, we'll have a link to it over at tomhartman.com in our daily stack today and in our newsletter that goes out to everybody, you know, pointing out what you're doing. So, Rich, give me a less than a minute summary of what this video is that people can get, or this play, is that what it is?
Well, yeah, it's a dramatization of what went on in actually writing the summary for the decision, the major decision, or, you know, the,
uh-huh.
the anyway.
Right.
And you're the one who did the great research on this and uncovered that, corporate personhood was never part of the decision.
Right.
So that's what we kind of, are looking at there. And so people can see it dramatized. And by the way, it's my debut in acting. And considering the fact that I play J.C. Bancroft Davis,
holy cow,
it's probably worth an Academy Award.
Yeah, John Chandler Bancroft Davis was the son of the former governor of Massachusetts, a very wealthy guy, a former international diplomat, and former president of a railroad, and he was the clerk of the United States Supreme Court who authored the infamous headnote in the Santa Clara County case in 1886 that said that the Chief Justice had said that corporations are people. even though headnotes have no legal standing, and that was not the sole beginning, but that was a major bump in the road or whatever, you know, wide spot in the highways, you know, for
the beginning
corporate personhood. Yeah, there you go.
It wasn't the beginning of corporate pressure to get more power.
Yeah.
But, and it's our toehold. It's our way. If we can get this amendment, we have to get this amendment in order to move corporations out from under the Constitution. So that we can begin restoring things to the power to the people.
I agree. Rich, so people can get that by sending an email to MP, as in Marion Pope, move to M-O-V-E-T-O, amend, at gmail.com.
Excellent.
Okay,
yes,
great. Rich, thanks a lot for the call, and you know, let us know how it works out. Hopefully you'll get some feedback on this. I appreciate your calling, and good on you for your activism. Claude in Whiting, New Jersey. Hey, Claude, what's up?
Hey, I love Mr. Hartman. Fine. I have a quick point to make. I consider myself a Democrat, been that for 70 years now. And the one thing that frustrates me the most in discussing some politics with some Republicans is to talk about creation of jobs. Every time I mention something like that, like we did, 4.3 million and another 2 million for this, they come out and say, well, where are we going to get the money to pay for these things? So I look at these guys and I say, well, you know, you're creating jobs. You're not just taking the money that you're using to get the job started down the hole. You're going to create jobs, which will in turn create revenues. Income taxes will be coming to the government. Social Security tax, Medicare money will come in. Local economies will benefit by it because the people will be spending money on the economy. And more money will be going into the coffers of cities and states, thereby putting back some, you know, the firemen, the policemen, and teachers, and so forth. So I haven't heard any discussion, either on TV or in radios, of any Democrat or progressive talking about how much revenue, estimated revenues, will be coming back to the government based on the jobs that we've created for the last 26 months, but also those that are on legislation that we sent that is being pending in the Congress.
I can tell you.
The question is there any way something like that could be estimated or guesstimated by the CBO?
I'm guessing there is. I'm not sure that it has been, but I can tell you just, you know, as a very simple factoid, the Republicans keep saying, well, Obama said he'd get unemployment below 8%, and he hasn't done that yet. And that's what they're hitting him over the head with. Over 600,000 government employees have been laid off or fired in red states by Republican governors. If those 600,000 people, now in blue states, Democratic governors have been actually hiring people. Blue states have been actually growing 2.6% over the last year. Red states are shrinking. They're getting smaller. So anyhow, if those 600,000 people had not been laid off or fired in the red states by the Republican governors, unemployment right now would be 7.3%. So, you know, it's very clear to me that this is a concerted strategy. And thanks a lot for the call, Claude. This is a concerted strategy on the part of Republicans to keep the economy in the tank, or at least keep unemployment above 8%, because it wasn't Obama who said it. It was somebody in his administration, but they can continually say that it was the Obama administration that said it. They continually say Obama said it. But in any case, that's what they want to beat him up with. And I think that they're going to do it. They're going to beat him up.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
I mean, it's not just they're going to. They are. Now, the question is whether they'll beat him or not. And that has a lot more to do with whether or not you show up. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And Al in Buffalo, New York. You're on the air. What's Al? What's up, Al?
Hey, how do we? I was going to ask the senator. How do we get the people in the movie industry and the music industry to get active and help us? You know, like the lower and middle income people to save our country from, you know, this monstrosity of propaganda coming from the Republican Party. I mean, Tom, the American dream is slipping away, and we really, really need help.
Well, people in the movie industry and in the music industry are just business people who are out to make a buck. And many of them are Republicans.
But progressives, too.
Well, yeah, but, you know, that doesn't... And you know, Steven Spielberg and Barbara Streisand individually give money to progressive causes, but, you know, the industry is just an industry. I mean, yeah, frankly, I think that the music and the movie industries need to be broken up just like every other industry.
Yeah, could I ask you one more question?
Sure.
Can we get people to just start taking pictures with their cell phones or any kind of a camera to just start taking pictures of roads and bridges that need work and just start inundating the Republican Party with these, with a bunch of emails showing the pictures of how bad our infrastructure looks?
That's a great idea. That's the sort of thing that, one of the big websites, Truthout or somebody like that should just say, okay, we're gonna have a page where people can put pictures of infrastructure that's in a crisis right now. It's a very good idea, Al. Thanks a lot for saying it. Carmen in Hamilton, Montana. Hey, Carmen, what's up?
Oh, wow. God, I've been listening for so long. There's so much to talk about.
Pick
one.
Thank
you for giving me the opportunity to speak.
Sure.
I just want to let you know I'm a 3-tour combat veteran from Vietnam.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen the tip of the bayonet. Just a quick one on the Citizens United. My mom's side of the family was named Adams. They fought in the Revolutionary War, and I don't believe there was any corporations fighting for freedom to get away from England. Okay, but I want
no,
to
in fact, it was the opposite. We were fighting against the British East India Company.
I'm being facetious, but anyways,
yeah.
you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
They weren't there to help us. No corporations were there helping us.
That's right.
So I was told once by a very important person that I was bodyguarding in Vietnam, the New World Order is coming in. This is 1968, and I go, what's the New World Order? And he goes, that's where we're going to turn this whole planet into plantation earth, where slaves come in all colors, and all you have to do to be one is have a social security number.
Wow.
Okay? Now, I wanted to say another thing.
He was prescient.
Yeah, well, if you ever come fish with me, I'll tell you who these people are, and your hair would stand up on the back of your neck.
Okay.
Also, I wanted to say I have a lot of friends that got killed in the service over then, and all these ridiculous wars. There was no Tonkin Gulf incident. Never happened. I was fighting for Royal Dutch Shell, Minnesota Mining Manufacturing, Bechtel Corporation, Michelin Rubber Plantation, on and on and on.
Yep. Just like Smedley Butler said, you know.
Okay, but let me tell you something. We left Iraq, and I know we were lied into it. I know we were lied into it. The babies were never thrown out of the incubators. I had friends who were there said it never happened.
Yep.
And they said Americans are so sappy. Give them the sappiest story there is, and they will go.
Well, and you know who told that story before Congress?
Who?
It was the daughter of the Kuwaiti ambassador.
Well, there's guys around here that have been there, too, and they're telling the same story. These kids, friends of my kids.
Yeah.
I mean, kids of my friends. Every one of them has been a lie. And when Bush said the weapons of mass destruction, I'm 100% disabled. I threw a freaking candlestick holder right through my TV. I couldn't believe it. But here we go again.
Yeah.
You know, when
it's
we left
golf
there, Tom,
in all over again.
Tom, when we left there, we left the place pretty secure. We said, hey, does anybody want all this for nothing? And a year and a half later, or a year or so later, the oil companies dove in there and got that for less than $1 a barrel. On that day was $110 a barrel, I think, and we made something. They made $200 or $300 trillion that day. Do you think they'd ever say, "Here's $15 trillion for just letting us in, and for all this blood you got on the sand here, and everything"? Here's another $15 trillion to put you in.
You're talking about the profits that the oil companies made in Iraq.
Yes, sir,
yeah.
I am. Tom.
And they're continuing to make, and not just American oil companies, and not just the big international oil companies that operate in the United States. The first major lease out of Iraq was to a Chinese oil company.
Oh, of course, it's all one big thing now.
Yeah.
What something else I wanted to say. I don't ever cry for nothing, man. My grandchildren say, "Grandpa, how come you don't cry?" My wife and everybody go, "How come you don't cry?" Well, they never seen what I've seen. I was in wholesale butchering of people. Anyways, I watched the Memorial Day parade in Corvallis, California. If you look in the Missoulian Independent, you'll see something on it. Basically, I saw an outhouse go by. And it was a crude and overt threat against the president's life in the form of bullet-pocked outhouse labeled Obama Prudential Reading Library.
Presidential
it,
Library,
it
yeah.
It had all kinds of sexual innuendos.
Yeah, inside is said for a real good time, call Michelle. It was foul.
Yeah, there's nothing but Republicans and Mormons in this valley. I'm one of the only independents we got here.
Yeah. Well, Carmen, it's good you're there in Hamilton, Montana. Keep it up. Thanks a lot for the call and for your comments and for your service to our country. Lou in Everett, Washington. Hey, Lou, what's up?
Well, I'd like to point out that in 1992, while I was doing consulting design work for a major corporation, I was required to sit through a speech that was broadcast by George Herbert Walker Bush. And in that speech, he made this marvelous statement that democracy is where $1 gets one vote.
$1 gets one vote?
Exactly. And I was so shocked by it, I was sure I misheard it. And a couple days later, they rebroadcast the speech on NPR, and I very carefully listened to it, and that's exactly what he said.
Wow.
And that's exactly what we've got. Now, you sit here and you look at the situation we're in. You know, the taxpayers of the United States of America in general, and Washington State and South Carolina in particular, have put up $47 billion for Boeing to build the 787. And as part of that, Boeing took 80 years of classified American research into aircraft wing design and so broadcast it around the planet.
Mm-hmm.
Which means that the one advantage we had in aircraft is now public knowledge for the rest of the world.
Right.
The people have no clue how thoroughly subsidized American major corporate industry is.
No, it's huge.
And
it's hundreds of billions of dollars a year.
Oh, absolutely. I was on the team that developed the modern CNC machine tool controller. There are no CNC machine tool controllers made in an industrial quantity here in the U.S. They've all been
anymore.
Shipped overseas.
Yep.
We rebuild factories, completely automate them, they tear them apart and they move them overseas, and they get tax credits for doing it.
Yep. And when Nancy Pelosi and the Democrats in the House of Representatives passed a piece of legislation that would end those tax credits for corporations moving jobs overseas and give them instead tax credits for moving those factories back to the United States, even though it had more than 50% support in the United States Senate, so according to the Constitution, it should have passed, Republicans in the Senate filibustered it and blocked it.
Oh, yeah. And then the interlocking board of directors. I mean, what, we have three actual supermarket chains in this country?
Yeah, yeah, it is insane. Lou, I got to move along. I want to get some more callers in here. It's a busy Friday. Nadia in South Elgin, Illinois. I hope I'm not mispronouncing your name.
You are doing perfectly well, Tom. First of all, thank you so much for all you do. I wanted to do two plugs. One, I'm running for Kane County Board, District 14.
Wow.
In South Elgin, Illinois, thanks to your motivation.
Well, that's great. Is there a website for it, Nadia? Hello? Nadia, I think your cell phone croaked. So try and call us back, okay, because you've just vanished. Hopefully nobody else has. Hopefully this isn't the beginning of one of those awful trends that we see. Armin in Bradenton, Florida. Hey, Armin, is it working?
Hey, brother Tom.
How you doing?
Guess what?
It's a four-letter word. It starts with W. It's usually called an interrogatory.
Nah.
Did I guess right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Anyway, I need to tell you, and especially you, and a lot of the real smart callers out there that know how to discern reality and put the facts up that portray the real picture of what the elite from the top down are really doing to this country, and the majority of the people used to be middle class. There's a website, and it's all together. It's called AmericaWhatWentWrong.org, AmericaWhatWentWrong.org, and they have this absolute statistical chart that you can go on with your computer, and you can go to, it tracks all the states in the United States of America from 1971 to 2011, and it has all the statistics of each state each year that has green balloons. The green balloons indicate an increase in manufacturing jobs. The red balloons indicate an increase in losing jobs, you know, more jobs leaving the
mm-hmm.
United States and manufacturing jobs shrinking. And you can take the precursor and you can run it and play with this thing, and you can take it through all the Republican presidents, all the Democrat presidents. You can see the years we had the staggering job losses. We had staggering job losses in 1990 when Bush, one, was blackmailed because of his kid, Neil Bush, going into the Iraq, or else his kids were on the altar of justice, Neil Bush, for their shenanigans and everything.
For the SNL
stuff. Lost 1.5 million jobs almost that year alone. And then it even shows after Clinton passed NAFTA how many we lost. But it's just unbelievable statistically factual. And it just puts it all together, like you said. the Republicans, including Reagan, you can track him, and you can see what they've used to substitute the jobs leaving this country, manufacturing. They've grown the government. They've grown the taxes, property taxes, fees, all these other things. They've been setting up there in Washington and running our economy, the elite, like a friggin' casino and a racket, and they've been a gaming industry.
You got it. To the Tom Hartman program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Harmon nails it again. We'll be back 45 minutes past the hour. Stick around. We'll be back with Anything Goes right after the top of the hour in our third hour, and I've got to tell you about this amazing isn't the word, astounding, horrifying situation coming out of North Carolina, where the state had involuntarily sterilized thousands of people. And you are going to be so shocked when you learn what the Republicans are all about with this involuntary sterilization program done by the North Carolina Eugenics Board. I'll tell you about that after the top of the hour. But right now, the Talk Radio News Service brought to you by the German Embassy, which wants you to know that Germany supports the European strategy to strengthen the euro through fiscal stability, solidarity, and growth. You can learn more online at germany.info. And Victoria Jones with the Talk Radio News Service on the line with us. Hey, Victoria.
Two words, state senate, I think, is what you're going to be talking about in that story.
I will be, yes.
Yes, indeed.
But don't give it away.
I'm not giving away. I'm not giving away any bits or any lines or anything. I was just so horrified when I read that story, and I ran out of time. That's why it's not in this morning's email. And I was gobsmacked.
It's a jaw-dropper what these Republicans in North Carolina are trying to do to these people who were involuntarily sterilized. I mean, it's just a jaw-dropper. Yeah. But we'll get into that in about 12 minutes.
Looks like they're going to. Looks like they were. Anyway, fascinating front-page article in the Washington Post today talking about how during Mitt Romney's tenure at Bain Capital, Bain invested in a series of firms that specialized in relocating jobs done by American workers to new facilities in low-wage countries like China and India. Also countries like Singapore, Taiwan, Ireland, and France, all kinds of countries that were not America. Big reaction from the Obama campaign today. They held a big conference call. Now, the Post contacted the Romney campaign numerous times for comment. They declined to comment for the story.
You know what I find most interesting about this is back a month or so ago, the Obama campaign, as I recall, and maybe it was some branch of the Democratic Party, ran an ad kind of calling Mitt Romney the outsourcer in chief over at Bain Capital. And PolitiFact, as I recall, which I think is affiliated with the Washington Post, you would know better than me.
St. Petersburg Times.
Okay. PolitiFact gave them four Pinocchios. In other words, this is full of lies. And their author on that said, Romney sort of, his company sort of invested in a little bit, but it was no big deal and it was not. And now here comes the Washington Post with this incredibly, I read the article you're talking about this morning, and this incredibly long, detailed company after company after company, thousands of jobs, tens of thousands of jobs, hundreds of thousands of jobs sent offshore so that Mitt Romney could make more millions to put in his Cayman Islands and Swiss bank accounts. It's amazing.
It's amazing.
And it'll be interesting to see if PolitiFact walks back their four Pinocchios.
They're usually honest enough that they do things like, it'll be interesting. It'll be interesting. The Romney campaign is calling the story fundamentally flawed, saying that the report confuses outsourcing with offshoring.
Oh, isn't that sad?
Which is just kind of lame, and you would think that when they were contacted numerous times by the Post, they could have taken the time to point it out to them at the time, she said in kind of an editorial tone.
Well, and I would add, who gives a rat's patootie? I mean, outshoring, offshoring, outsourcing, if you're talking about a company making more money by sending its labor to some other countries so that you can make products without American labor, but you want to sell them to American workers, I mean, that's Mitt Romney's business model. I salute the Washington Post for pointing it out on the front page today.
Front page, lead story. The president is giving a campaign speech today after giving his immigration speech earlier today, and he will target Mitt Romney. He will say today, it was reported in the Post, that the companies his firm owned were pioneers in the outsourcing of American jobs to places like China and India. Pioneers. Tampa, we don't need an outsourcing pioneer in the Oval Office.
Yeah, well, that's the phrase that the Washington Post used, was it not? Yeah.
Yes, and he's gonna jump off that.
And the Post pointed out, Mitt Romney wasn't just standing by watching this happen. He was at the helm at Bain Financial, and he personally micromanaged many, if not most, of these deals.
Hands on, very hands on,
yes.
Very hands on indeed. Yes. The president today spoke to the elected and appointed officials, Hispanic, in Florida, same group that Romney spoke to yesterday. Big differences. They applauded. They stood up. They were actually in the room.
Wait a minute. When Romney spoke to the Hispanic group, they did not applaud. It was on the news and I just missed it. I've not been a big consumer of media recently. But was that widely reported that they didn't seem all that friendly?
It was widely reported that he got tepid applause.
Mm-hmm.
When he gave his big applause line, "I will repeal Obamacare," he got very little applause and one man booed.
Hmm.
And
that was Romney.
Empty seats. That was
right.
Romney.
So today, then Obama shows up with the same group today, and what happened?
He 45 minutes of a standing ovation. He opened up in Spanish, saying it's good to be among friends. The cheering went on. And then when he talked about the Dream Act, or at least what he did last week, and he spoke about how important it was to do what he said. He said, "Your speaker from yesterday, he's promised to veto the Dream Act, and we should take him at his word."
Yeah.
He said, he was pretty frank about this, and he went on to say something, something, something. Then he paused, gave them all a look, and said, I'm just saying. Yeah, I'm just saying.
Yeah, very well said. Okay, Victoria Jones with the Talk Radio News Service. Thank you, Victoria, for the news report.
Thank you.
This Talk Radio News Service report is brought to you by the German Embassy, which wants you to know that Germany supports the European strategy to strengthen the euro through fiscal stability, solidarity, and growth. You can learn more online at germany.info. And as I mentioned, North Carolina, the Senate, the Republicans in the Senate of North Carolina are getting their hands into this thing that the North Carolina Eugenics Board did, sterilizing thousands of mostly poor, mostly African-American people. I'll tell you about this right after the break.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Okay, so here's what happened. From 1929 until 1974. Now, 29, the Herbert Hoover administration, 74, the Gerry Ford administration. During that period of time, and by the way, everybody says, oh, yeah, Hitler was all into eugenics. Hitler was, trying to create the master race, clean out. He didn't just kill Jews. That was horrible enough. But he also killed, in addition to going after people because of their religion, and he went after Catholics, and he went after, ultimately. But he also went after people who were mentally retarded. He also went after people who were gay. He also went after people who were unionists, trade unionists. He also went after people who were communists or sympathizers. But in particular, Hitler had this eugenics program to weed the gene pool of the Aryan race of its defects. And they exterminated mentally retarded people, mentally ill people, people who were physically deformed or disabled. And he got that program from us. We started it in the 1920s. Hitler wasn't even, didn't come to power until the mid-1930s. So we started it in the 1920s. And North Carolina had their very own program. They had a board that decided who would be allowed to, now they didn't, you know, gas people. What they did was they decided whether or not people would be able to procreate, to produce offspring, to have children. If they were men, they got castrated or they got vasectomies. And more often than not, it was simple castration. It was cheaper and easier back then. And if it was women, they got their tubes tied or they had a hysterectomy. Women or girls, men or boys. And they had a board that decided who got this treatment. It was called the North Carolina Eugenics Board. It operated from 1929 to 1974. Sterilized thousands of people, almost all of them poor and African American. Now, the North Carolina House said this is a horror story. There are still, it's estimated 7,600 North Carolinians were sterilized by the Eugenics Board. And it's believed that several thousand of them are still alive today. And so the House of Representatives set aside $10 million to give $50,000 each to the people who were sterilized by way of saying, we're sorry we took away your future, we took away your children, we took away your grandchildren, we destroyed your life, here's $50,000. Which frankly ain't squat, given what was taken from them. But it's a gesture. It was meant to be more, you know, of an apology than a reparation. But $50,000 per person. Only for the people who actually suffered the harm. So it passes the House, goes to the Senate, controlled by the Republicans, who say, no. Not going to do that. Senator Austin Allen, Republican of North Carolina, said, if you start compensating people who've been victimized by past history, I do not know where that would end. Oh, really? I mean, he wasn't just saying, hey, we can't afford it. This is just incredible. If you have any connections, another Republican, justified this by saying, I'm sorry it happened, but throwing money don't change it. Don't make it go away. It still happened. Incredible. Okay, so that's my anything goes contribution for the day. Elizabeth in Portland, what's yours?
Hi.
Hi.
This is Elizabeth. I was wondering, with the way word spread about the Occupy movement, why don't we use the internet to start electing non-career politicians or neighbors, people who, you know, aren't already set up to be bought off?
Well, I think that to a certain extent we are using the internet to not to directly elect people, but to certainly promote their election. There are a lot of websites, there are a lot of people running for political office who are using the internet. Barack Obama really pioneered that in 2008 in a big way. I mean, raised hundreds of millions of dollars on the internet. I wouldn't want elections held on the internet, though.
Neither would I. But I think we could get people in office or the word out there about people without spending a dime.
Yeah. Yeah. Or spending very, very little, depending on whether you're hosting the website or not. Yeah, and that's I would encourage you to find candidates, political candidates that you can support. And as we head toward the election, we're going to go back to having our once a week I've Taken My Country Back segment where we feature candidates who are running for political office who are worthy of people's support. But excellent point, Elizabeth. Thank you very much for making it. Michael in Dublin, Virginia. Hey, Michael, what's up?
Hey, Tom. Briefly, let me just explain a little bit about here we are with this goat or the star being turned upside down.
On the Republican logo, yeah.
On the Republican logo, it actually became what is called the Baphomet, or The Baphomet is a symbolic term associated with a Satan worshiper whose name was Aleister Crowley, and he was also known as the Baphomet. Now, it's called the Goat of Mendes, and it comes from the 5th century people who lived in Mendes, the city of Mendes in Egypt, on the River Nile. They worshipped the goat. In Babylon, the goat was known as Anke, or Satan, or Satan's god, okay? It was known as a god of vast intelligence and the lord of the sacred eye, who was the protector of the people and the bringer of knowledge and civilization. Now, the Baphomet comes from two words. It comes from the words in Greek, which means Baphomet and Metis, meaning the absorption of knowledge. Now, to conclude this, it's symbolic. The Baphomet is symbolic, or the goat head is symbolic of fertility and the transformation of the human soul into a god.
So, by the way, in Mormon theology, if you are high up in the Mormon church, when you die, you get your own planet.
Yes.
I wonder, I frankly doubt that has anything to do with it. But just for our listeners who don't know what you're talking about, first of all, I raised the question earlier, why, and I've been raising it for 8 years. Why did the Republicans flip the American star, the American flag, five-pointed star, which always had the head on the top, the feet on the bottom, and the arms out at the side, right? It was Leonardo da Vinci's or Michelangelo, whoever. I think it was Michelangelo's, you know, man, right? It was that's the five-parted star. Why did they turn that into the goat star? Why did they flip that upside down? So now at the top you have the two horns, at the side you've got the two ears, and at the bottom you got the chinny chin chin. Are you suggesting that the Republicans did it because they're Satan worshippers?
I'm suggesting that they see themselves as God, as the protector of civilization, and as a god, as part of that, whatever they're doing, they see themselves as superior, or the oligarch of the world, or of this nation that they're trying to incorporate, as you said earlier, into this new world corporate order.
Yeah, now, as George Herbert Walker Bush called it, the New World Order. Yeah.
Exactly. So this is now. Besides that, there's some things that go around saying, I'm trying to figure out what this ad company who actually put this together, what they have in this whole plan here. Why was it done and who did the artwork? Anyway, that's what I have to say about that, Tom.
Okay.
I hope that it helps the viewers.
Thanks a lot, Michael. I appreciate it. Thanks for the call and for some well-educated and informed insight. As to whoever the ad agency was that came up with this new logo, they have never come forward to the best of my knowledge. I have been looking for years. Who turned the stars upside down? Nobody will say.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Maybe it was done in a secret ceremony in a basement at the Skull and Bones Society with George W. Bush. Do you think?
In olden days, a glimpse of stocking looked on as something shocking. Now heaven knows anything goes.
Yeah, welcome back. Chuck in Columbia River Gorge, Oregon, right? Do I have that right, Chuck?
Hi, Tom.
Hey, Chuck. Congress is waterboarding the public? Tell me about it.
Well, I'm just... long-time listener, first time getting through. I'm wondering if you see any parallels between a Congress that didn't overwhelmingly, there was a lot of people, you know, kicking and screaming like Bernie about the waterboarding and all of that, and it seems to me there's a little bit of a parallel about what they're doing right now to the public. We got a Congress that's... they're just playing games with us. They're seeing how much we can take. They thought waterboarding was just, a good way to get information.
Right.
And they didn't have any qualms at all about how they were hurting people, destroying people, or whatever they were doing. And it's just kind of the same way right now.
Yeah.
Just people are just hanging out. You got a bunch of guys there that they don't know what's going on. They're in a world of their own.
Well, it's not just that they're in a world of their own, Chuck. A sociopath is a person who doesn't have the ability to empathize with others. They can't imagine the pain that other people feel. And
that's the world they're in.
Yeah, and I would say that a large chunk of the Republican Party and probably a few Democrats are sociopaths. And certainly much of the corporate world. I mean, the best guesses are that at least 10% of the corporate CEOs across the United States, and the probabilities And this is from an article in Forbes magazine. The probabilities are much that the numbers are much, much higher on Wall Street, because basically, in order to function in a sociopathic environment like Wall Street or like the modern, you know, CEO executive offices, you have to be a sociopath. I mean, or you do a much better job if you're a sociopath operating in that sociopathic environment. Chuck, thank you for the call. Well said. Mason in La Center, Kentucky. Hey, Mason, what's up?
How are you doing, Tom?
I am great, but I'll get better. How about you?
We'll be better in November, won't we?
Well, we'll see. I think America is going to be better over the next few years, though, no matter what happens. I really do.
What do you think about this? What do you think about this witch hunt that we have going on with the Republican Party and holding Eric Holder in contempt?
Well, they've got this. They've got this theory that Eric Holder and Barack Obama, two black guys, wanted to take away all the guns from the white people. And
yeah.
And I've gotten the emails, I've seen the websites, you know, I've heard the theory, and that the way that they did this, and nobody, you know, really proposed that Democrats were all about this back when they were white guys, but now that it's a black guy in the White House, it's, oh, well, that has to be, right? Maybe it's because this is revenge for slavery or something. I've seen that proposed as a theory behind it. So these two black guys in the White House, they decided that they would make white people in the United States willingly surrender the Second Amendment, amend the Constitution, get rid of the Second Amendment by selling or giving a bunch of guns to a bunch of brown people down in Mexico, having those brown people come up here and shoot up so many white people, create such a crime wave that the white people would start yelling, please do something, take away the guns, repeal the Second Amendment. And then Obama and Holder would come in and say, okay, that's it, we're going to take away the Second Amendment, and that's the end of the guns. And Wayne LaPierre, the head of the NRA, has promoted this theory or a variation on this theory. Members of Congress have promoted this theory. Daryl Issa right now is the most visible face of this theory in Congress. And that's what the Republicans are talking about. And Fox News has been harping on this thing for months, right? Well over a year. And so you talk to people who watch Fox News, you talk to people who spend a lot of time on the right-wing websites listening to right-wing talk radio, and you say Fast and Furious, they know immediately what you're talking about is that plan to take guns away from people. Shane, you got the clip from that congressman a couple of days ago who said, yeah, this is, we want to take away, we know, he was talking to Eric Holder, and he said, you know, we know that this is all about taking, you know, doing away with our Second Amendment rights. So anyhow, that's my take. Oh, here, just listen to this. This guy is interrogating Eric Holder. He's sitting there with Daryl Issa. What's the name of the congressman, Shane? Tim Walberg. This is Republican Congressman Tim Walberg. Just listen to this.
That this thing has gone wrong, was set up to go wrong.
It was a conspiracy.
And frankly, I believe it was set up to go wrong in order to deal with Second Amendment liberties of law-abiding citizens and pushing into a perception that it was the problem of the Second Amendment as opposed to law enforcement. And more importantly, Mr. Attorney.
So there you go. They're coming right out and saying this. They're saying it in code. They say Second Amendment. But they're coming right out and saying
like
it. So that's my take on it, Mason. You wanted to add something to that?
Yeah, they're pretty well. The way I view the Republican Party, they feel like they're the only ones that are law-abiding citizens.
Yes.
If you know what I mean.
Yes, I do. When he says law-abiding citizens, I personally think it's code for white people, but it might be code for Republican people. I don't know.
Yeah, it's just...
They're kind of the same thing, actually, these days.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I appreciate you taking your time, and I'd actually like to say I've been listening to several other shows lately, and I appreciate you taking the time to listen to everybody.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I appreciate the call, Mason, and thank you for the feedback. Esler in San Jose, California. Esler, we have a minute to the break. What's up?
Okay. Hi, Tom. I just wanted to give you an example of what money can do to an election. We just had an election here June 5th, and on the election there was a Prop 29, which was to add a dollar to the cigarette tax
in California,
and for cancer research.
Yep, and it was very, very popular until the tobacco companies dumped $50 million into the state.
Exactly. In mid-March, the proposition was in favor by about 60 to 30. It was about 30%. And by the time June 5th came around, after they put the $50 million in there, the proposition lost.
Yeah, and it lost by just...
And this is a progressive state.
Yep.
You know, California's a progressive state.
Yep.
So it's just...
Advertising works, and money buys advertising. And, you know, Citizens United, the Supreme Court has said, our democracy is now up to the highest bidder. And,
well, and that's what one of the things that worries me about. I'm a big fan of Obama's, and I'll vote for him, but when they're putting up $1 billion plus into campaigns against them.
This weekend in San Diego, the Koch brothers are having a meeting of billionaires where they're probably going to raise $500 million. And coincidental with that, Mitt Romney's having a meeting with multimillionaires. He's got 300 of them coming to Salt Lake City, and he's probably going to raise, you know, $50-60 million. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
More of Anything Goes Friday right after this. 866-987-TOM. Our telephone number, TomHartman.com. Drop into our free live chat room and say hi. I'm going there right now.
Stress yourself.
Express yourself. Welcome back. Yes, your opportunity to express yourself here on the Tom Hartman Program on Anything Goes Friday. And Peter in Minnetonka, Minnesota. My keyboard is throwing eyes into heads up, Paul. Our software is going nuts. Peter, what's up?
Well, I wanted to talk to you about this issue that seems to come up again and again about the relationship between treaties and statutes.
Okay.
And, you know, what I repeatedly hear is that treaties, because they are the, you know, quote, supreme law of the land, take precedence over statutes.
Mm-hmm.
I researched this and found a case which I think is still controlling named Reed, R-E-I-D, v. Covert, C-O-V-E-R-T. Mm-hmm. Citation is 354 U.S., page 1. 1957.
Mm-hmm.
And there the court said that when a statute has language that's inconsistent with a treaty and the statute is passed after the treaty, the statute controls over the treaty.
The Supreme Court said this.
Yeah. In fact, the quote would be, the court has also repeatedly taken the position that an act of Congress, which must comply with the Constitution, is on full parity with a treaty, and that when a statute, which is subsequent in time, is inconsistent with a treaty, the statute, to the extent of conflict, renders the treaty null.
What's that case, please?
It's, again, it's Reed, R-E-I-D,
right.
Reed Covert, C-O-V-E-R-T.
What year?
It's 1957,
okay.
354 U.S., page 1. And it cites back to a case called Whitney versus Robertson in footnote 34 to this. And there the quote is, by Constitution, a treaty is placed on the same footing and made of like obligation with an act of legislation.
Well, there's a certain logic to that. I mean,
sure.
if a treaty becomes the law of the land and then Congress changes the law of the land changes. The treaty isn't put at the level of the Constitution. It's put at the level of legislation. So it makes perfect sense. So the therefore that you take out of this is that if we don't like some of the provisions of NAFTA, SHAFTA, whatever, we could simply pass a law saying, no, we want to have dolphin-safe tuna.
Right.
Yeah.
And you can do that. Then you may have problems in front of the these commissions that are set up.
Sure.
But the dolphin-safe tuna part actually should, if it's subsequent in time and it's directly...
Well, that law preceded NAFTA.
That one did? Okay, if
yeah.
they repass it.
Yeah,
and
they need to repass it.
And if you're insisted, the last one in date will control over the other.
Very interesting. Thank
yeah.
you for that. Thanks for that bit of information, Pete. I appreciate
one
it.
One other thing, Tom.
Sure.
The person who was talking about America, What Went Wrong?
Yeah. There's a book by the same title, by the way.
They raised that because there were two... reporters for the Philadelphia Inquirer, Bartlett and Steele. They wrote a book called America, What Went Wrong in 1992, talked all about the what led into the collapse of the SNLs and the Reagan tax cut. It's just mm-hmm. absolutely loaded with great graphs and charts. And I'd say it's really a seminal document in terms of things that people might want to take
I
a
believe
look at.
That this website is based on that book.
If it is, that's it's a great book.
Yeah, AmericaWhatWentWrong.org. Okay, great.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Thanks,
I appreciate it, Peter. Tim in Los Angeles. Hey, Tim, what's up?
Hey, Tom. I got an update on Fukushima for the last time we talked.
Okay. Yeah, are you the fellow who called and said that school kids, American school kids, were being recruited to go over to help clean up Fukushima?
Yes. And then after further research, the prefixes in which they ran Fukushima, Iwate, and Miyagi all had 50,000 tons of radioactive waste at 8,000 becquerels per kilogram, which is 80 times above normal radiation levels.
Right.
And in Business Week today, Fukushima plants face more typhoons, because this is typhoon season, and why do they go during the summer? I don't know why. But also, tornadoes.
Hmm.
Because of climate change.
Yeah. Yeah, they didn't have tornadoes before in Japan, did they?
No.
They just had typhoons. But now they're having tornadoes. Oh, that's great.
Yes. The first tornado they had was last month.
Amazing. Amazing. Tim, thank you very much for the for the update. It's bad news, but... In Leesburg, my computer's gone nuts. Is it Alden?
Yes, that's correct.
Hey, Alden. What's up?
I was watching at lunchtime. We have at least CNN, a slightly neutral, pardon the pun, news agency. But I was watching President Obama addressing the Latino Elected Officials Conference, and was very, very disappointed with his performance, because he recently announced a lot of initiatives that would kind of be playing into that audience, but you could hear the crickets as he was speaking, and I think somehow he's got
actually he got 45 minutes of standing ovation. I think you must have been watching the Romney speech, because Romney got crickets. Romney was largely ignored, but President Obama was not. DiCarlo in Oakland, California. Hey, DiCarlo, what's up?
Hey, Tom. I was just wanting to say a couple things. One, I hope that you get Thomas Mann and Norman Ornstein. They've written a book, It's Even Worse Than It Looks, on your show, because they're primarily being blacked out by mainstream media because they're talking about Congress. And then they also bring up what I've talked about before, mandatory voting. They're saying that we need to start going into this where we're trying to get into a mandatory voting.
Like Australia does.
Yeah, like Australia does and like other countries around the world do, because the populace has gotten so ignorant due to the infrastructure of education.
Well, Norman Ornstein has been on our program a number of times in the past, so I'll have to track down this book and track him down. Thanks for the heads up on that. I appreciate it.
And one other thing also.
Yeah.
Also, I wanted to comment, because you mentioned this situation, and no one has mentioned it since you've said this about the situation in North Carolina.
Yeah.
It's shocking. I'm going to tell you, it connects back to the Tuskegee experiments. My grandfather's a twin, and his brother was involved in it.
Oh my.
And then also the Native American re-education program for youth that they did up into the 1970s, where they were taking children out of reservations, taking them as far away as possible, because initially they started, like 50 or 60 miles away from where their reservation was, and people would literally walk to their kids, and they start moving them the other side, literally the other side of the country, and re-educating them to do primarily like manservant or maid, those kind of jobs. And they did that on purpose, and it was subsidized by the state governments and the federal governments.
Yeah.
So I'm glad that you're bringing all this stuff up, and I hope people, all these progressives who are calling in, I hope that they start making some comments, because it seems to me, I know that they may hear it, but maybe it's rolling off of them like, water on a duck, because this is stuff that we need to talk about. It's going to help the society get better. And I thank you.
You're welcome. I agree with you. Just a note on why you might not have heard any comments on this, because the chat room, before my computer croaked and I got kicked out of it, the chat room was really all over this topic, and I'm guessing we would have had a lot of callers on it, but we have a dozen lines coming in here, and they have all been slammed all day. And so, I started that topic at the top of the third hour, and all 12 lines were filled, and they have been filled continuously ever since then. So there might have been, and they were all filled with people who wanted to talk about topics we talked about in our second hour, or that Bernie talked about in the first hour. So it may well be that there are a lot of people who tried to call. 99% of the people who try to call this program just get a busy signal. And so I wouldn't assume that nobody wants to talk about it. Very often when we're explicitly changing a topic at the top of the hour, we'll just go through and clear the lines. We'll say to everybody, you know, we're going to change our topic at the next hour, and we'll start the new hour with 12 open lines. But we didn't today. We don't do that on Fridays. So don't be disheartened. I'm guessing that there's a lot more concern out there than is evidenced by the lack of calls on this topic. Okay?
Tom, I trust me, I don't get disheartened because you are bringing up these topics on national television, on the national radio. Trust me, it fills my heart with joy that you express this out here because it's not being expressed out in mainstream media. This is our history. This is the United States history, and we need to be honest and fair and say everything that happened instead of partially. So I thank you for what you do.
You're welcome, and you're absolutely right. Thank you very much. Alfred in Seattle. Hey, Alfred, what's up?
Tom, we spoke many times 3-4 years ago, and your voice, I'm a voice specialist, and your voice sounds a lot like a friend of mine named Ron Reagan, and your voice also sounds like John MacArthur, who's been on the radio for 40 years.
I don't know John, but Ron Reagan is a good guy.
He's my buddy.
He's a good guy.
I think that things don't look too good. I'm a former John F. Kennedy heavy-duty Democrat, and I don't like the way that Obama feels like he's pushing too hard on everybody. Mm-hmm. Whether it's any issue you think of, he seems to be ramming it, and the Republicans are calling him a dictator, and it sounds real heavy.
Well, here's the problem. He's not pushing that hard because he doesn't have that kind of power. All legislation has to originate in the House of Representatives. The House of Representatives is controlled by the Republicans. The president cannot initiate legislation. There's no pushing that the president can do other than giving speeches. So, you know, I get it that the meme right now on the right is that he's a little dictator and he's pushing. But the fact of the matter is, I wish he could.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Anything goes Friday. More of your calls right after this.
Trees of green, red roses too. I see them bloom for me and you. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world.
Hey, thanks so much to our show director, Louise Hartman, to our executive producer, Sean Taylor, to our associate producers, Jacob Dean and Shane Farnan. Our video director, Jim Javinsky, our phone screeners, Paul Edney and Rain Koch, and writer, is it Coke? Coke, thank you. No, it's not. It's Koch. Yeah, that's what I thought. And writer-researcher Sam Sachs, we teaser. To Alva Goldberg, and then I get confused. To Alva Goldberg for video production, to our webmasters, Nigel Peacock and Jamie Holly, our business manager, Ron Hartenbaum of WYD, everyone at the various companies that syndicate our program, Dial Global, Pacifica Radio, Free Speech TV, Dish Network, DirecTV, all our cable providers that carry our show, Comcast, Manhattan Neighborhood Network, all the others around the country. To all the great folks at Free Speech TV and RTTV who work on The Big Picture, to our newsletter editor, Sue Nethercutt, the folks in our chat room, to Ellen Ratner and Victoria Jones and everyone at the Talk Radio News Service, to Jay Goodman Tamboli for our tech support, to our affiliates, our sponsors, and to you for supporting our program. Thank you. And I think I have at least part of my computer working again. I'm Chip in Unionville, Pennsylvania. I got it now. Hey, Chip, what's up?
Hey, Tom, how you doing?
Good.
The thing I'm worried about and questioning is, how does this government start all these secret things and nobody knows about them?
Well, that's the whole point. The Fast and Furious thing. Chip, you...
When they get passed off to the next government, the next person.
Yeah.
Chip, and nobody knows about them.
Chip, let me just ask you a question. You ever seen, you know, one of these movies where the FBI is going after the mob and they got a, you know, a drug ring, say, going on?
Yes.
And so they buy some heroin with marked money.
Yeah.
They give them some $100 bills that have, you know, invisible writing that'll show up under a UV light, or they know what the serial numbers are. They get that money in there so that when they bust into the drug house, they can find the money, and they know then that the chain of custody went from the street guy to the intermediary to that drug kingpin. You've seen those kind of things. I mean, we've all seen those kind of movies, right? That's exactly what Fast and Furious was. The guns and the ammunition had serial numbers on them. They sold those things to these low-level gun guys who were parts of the Mexican drug mafias in the hopes that they would get brought into the larger offices of the big kingpins, and they could then use them to bust them. Now, I'm not saying that's a good way to do law enforcement or a bad way to do law enforcement, but that's how they were doing it. And had that border guard not gotten shot with one of those guns that they had introduced into the system, we wouldn't even know about this, and they probably would, you know, be throwing people in jail right now. In fact, Eric Holder is in the process of throwing people in jail as a result of this investigation.
I agree with that. So, I agree with that 100%.
So
when it first started, I mean, from what I've read, it was something about guns and going into Mexico and pretty much trying to sell more of them to them.
Well, it was originally called Operation Wide Receiver, and it was run by the Bush administration. And the differences were that when the Bush administration did it, they told the Mexican government that they were doing it. And they had, border guys or ATF guys who were trying to track, you know, physically keep track of these guns. They were much more cautious about it. And the problem was that as soon as they told the Mexican government, the Mexican government is so riddled with corrupt cops the deal got blown as soon as it was announced, you know, in secret. And so when the Obama administration, and it wasn't even the Obama administration, I mean, this was done by the permanent bureaucracy of the ATF. This was not an administration initiative as much as it was the ATF had been doing this for a while.
That's part of my question. How do they hide those things?
They do secret, you know, stings all the time. I mean, that's.
And then how does the Congress come out and say, we're going to investigate this?
Well, it came out. I mean, this border guard was killed with this gun that was tracked back to Fast and Furious. Somebody leaked that somehow. I don't know how.
I know.
Yeah.
I don't understand. I am so confused about the government.
Well, you know, law enforcement has for many, many years, and it probably is, it goes back thousands of years, law enforcement has employed, in addition to catching people doing crimes and using good old-fashioned shoe leather and saying, oh, here's the DNA on the toothbrush kind of thing, you know, in addition to that normal kind of forensic stuff, they also do proactive things. Now, I'm not a fan, frankly, of entrapment. I think that it should be illegal. But you know, the feds do entrapment, so that's what's going on. Chip, I get some other callers in here. Thank you for the call, though. Mike in Middleton, Idaho. Hey, Mike, what's up?
Hey, Tom. A couple of things, but most importantly, I wanted to say thank you. A heartfelt thank you for providing me with the tools that I needed to flip three basically hardcore Republicans, two of them of which are truck drivers, and I'm sure you've probably heard that truck drivers are notoriously right-wing. You can't find a TV on anything other than Fox.
In any truck stop in America, I know.
Any truck stop in America. It's so bad. I usually get my dinner to go, and I eat with my dogs in the truck because I just can't stomach the absolute lunacy of what they're saying on Fox.
Yeah.
And the third person that I flipped is, believe it or not, a Mormon woman whose husband's idol is Sean Hannity. They're all going to be voting for Obama this year because of the information that I have passed on to them that I've gained from you.
Well, I'm pleased that's been useful to you. And thank you very much, Mike, for the report back. I mean, one of the things that we say here is that we're helping you win the water cooler wars. It sounds like Mike has been on the front lines. Coming up next on the Tom Hartman Program, right-wingers say protections to prevent prison rape are too costly and heavy-handed. I'll have a rumble with conservative David Halper at the Weekly Standard, plus PTSD and Deepak Chopra. And the best of the rest of the news and your calls right here on the Tom Hartman Program, occupying the media 3 hours a day, 5 days a week for We the People. And have a great weekend. Get out there and get active. Tag, you're it. Occupy something. We'll see you next Monday.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, go to TomHartman.com.